Well, welcome, everybody. And so just a few reminders to start out that registration closes the 12th as far as delegates. And everyone must re-register if you were at the QDMs or last ABC. You still have to re-register. Now, observers, they can register right up to the ABC. The resources for delegates and anybody else interested in the conference and all the business that goes on there and associated with that is this conference webpage, adultchildren.org conference. And it contains ABC Portal, which used to be the delegate guidebook was one name for it. It is more of a online sort of digital based, but you can also download it as a PDF. And it contains many things. The delegate handbook is in there, and that's sort of like how to be a delegate in general. It's not specifically for this ABC. And there's delegate training audio slides available there. The agenda's in there, and the agenda will have links at each agenda item for the voting procedures for that agenda item, as well as any information, like say the motion, or if there is some other information associated with it. And this presentation in the audio, this the slideshow will, as well as the audio, will be on the ABC portal. So I would like to introduce Michael Malibut, and he is a professional registered parliamentarian, certified professional parliamentarian and teacher, and a certified governance trainer. And he's had 30 years of service as a parliamentarian for 12-step World Service conferences. And that's particularly important for us, I believe. So he has a lot of experience. Just a few things on ground rules. On the questions, we're gonna time the questions, and please keep them to like 90 seconds. And to allow everyone a chance to ask questions, we may call on people out of order, like if somebody hasn't asked a question yet, we may call on them before somebody that's already asked one. Given that we only have a short time, please make sure it's like asking questions and avoid kind of commentary or, And the chat will be disabled during the presentation and Q&A to also avoid kind of like distraction. The hosts and co-hosts can be chatted. And conference facilitators, we can stay after for about 15 minutes to try and answer any additional questions. And so we'll stop share and let Michael take over, and I can share the do the screen sharing for you, Michael.
Thank you, Marcus. I appreciate that. Hi, I'm Mike Malamut. I'm a professional parliamentarian, and among other things, and I will be working with ACA for the coming annual business conference. I've worked previously with ACA for a quarterly meeting and have been working on a rapport with some of the existing leadership and with the co-chairs of your meetings, the co-presiding officers, Carmen and William, and hoping that my background will help to facilitate and enhance the effectiveness of your meetings and the perceptions that the meetings are being held as fairly and even-handedly as is possible in the context of trying to get your business done as well at the same time. So as a parliamentarian, you can start sharing slides now, Marcus.
Okay.
This is the title slide, talking about the introduction to the parliamentarian, the role of parliamentarian in ACA, particularly an outside parliamentarian, which is a relatively new working issue with ACA, and the guiding principles for the meetings that we're going to be having that are part of your business meetings at the ABC, and what the underlying principles for those meetings are. So, next slide, please. A brief overview of the topics we'll be covering this session. About half is on the role of the parliamentarian and the meeting in the meeting and helping to guide the meeting, because that is relatively new for many of you people who haven't who have participated in meetings before. The other half is going to be addressing the roles of the various other participants in the meeting, how we all interact, which is a refresher for people who have been involved in the meetings in the past, and which is new for people who are going to be attending their first ABC. And we are open to questions. We'll try and take questions after we've done a block of slides, so at appropriate, breakpoints for that. And we're trying to leave room for question and answer afterwards as well, if you want to save your questions until that point. So next slide, please. Some background for myself as a parliamentarian slash meeting consultant. And where I put down meeting consultant is everywhere except for the US, this type of role is called a meeting consultant. We're called parliamentarians, and the procedure we use is called parliamentary procedure, primarily in the United States, because the rules of basic meetings of nonprofit organizations ultimately derive from the prestige of the rules of the British Parliament, which were considered to be the longest standing rules for group deliberative meetings. And deliberative, by deliberative meetings, it means meetings in which all the participants have a right to contribute their thoughts and ideas, help to govern how the meeting is going to be structured and run, and ultimately make the decisions for the body. That makes a meeting a deliberative meeting. And we feel in the world of group dynamics, and for those who study group dynamics, that the rules that have been established over time and have evolved over time have shown great assistance in understanding what group dynamics principles are and incorporating them in the balance of principles and concerns to try and have an effective and efficient meeting. So, everywhere but the US, it's called meeting consultant. In the US, we call it parliamentarian because we have no parliament, and parliamentarian has no other meaning other than that of being a meeting consultant. What's my background to help work with these types of issues at your meeting is that there are two national organizations, I should say, two organizations that work primarily in North America. Canada and the United States. Both of the organizations have different focuses. The National Association of Parliamentarians focuses primarily on Robert's Rules of Order, which is the best known and most widely used parliamentary guide in North America and in much of the rest of the world as well. And the National Association of Parliamentarians focuses on that book. And I am a professional registered parliamentarian, which is the highest accreditation with that organization. And I am currently serving my second term for what they call the Question and Answers Committee. It's the Opinions Committee. We answer questions that come from the membership, and those are regularly published in our publications and become the primary way in which the rules and procedures for meetings in the United States and Canada are ultimately going to be governed. The other organization that is best known for accreditation is the American Institute of Parliamentarians. That group focuses on alternatives to Robert's Rules, primarily in regard to more modern, up-to-date, and plain English versions, streamlined versions of procedures that are more easily understood by groups of people that do not meet quite as regularly and quite as formally as conventions that are governed by Robert's Rules. The problem with these plain English alternatives is they're not as common and not as well known to people. And that may be a something cause some people who don't know these alternatives to have to actually read those books in some detail before they understand. But with the American Institute of Parliamentarians, I'm a certified professional parliamentarian and teacher, and I've been a member of their opinions committee, which works a little bit differently, since 2000, and I was the chair from 2008 to 2023. BoardSource is the National Center for Nonprofit Boards. It is well known primarily for its contributions to board governance and board training. I am a certified governance consultant with BoardSource, which helps to provide information to me about the latest research from science, social sciences in group dynamics and meeting procedures. They work not only with boards, but with nonprofits generally, and they work on the relationships between boards and the conferences of groups like yours that have a conference that supervenes and oversees the work of the board. I'm an attorney by training and a longtime member of the American Bar Association. I was the chair of the Nonprofit Organizations Committee of the American Bar Association from 2013 to 2017. And that is the organization that prepares and updates the Model Nonprofit Corporation Act. I was the president of the American College of Parliamentary Lawyers from 2009 to 2012 and remain an active member of that organization. And I thought it was also of some interest and use to know that I was an elected commissioner of trust funds in my hometown of Dedham, Massachusetts from 2006 to 2019, and the chair of that organization for 5 years. That is a publicly elected position, and the commission of the trust involvement is something that I think speaks to the spiritual aspect of the recovery work that we're doing with ACA and with the other 12-step fellowships that I've worked with. I've worked with a number of different 12-step organizations over the years, both at the national, the intergroup, and the international levels. And for I have had many, many year long-term relationship with Debtors Anonymous and with Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, two of the large 12-step recovery organizations that are governed by the underlying principles, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts that are how the group conscience of the fellowship as a whole is achieved, the primary purpose of your conference. Next slide. So, more on the role of a parliamentarian in general in meetings. Parliamentarian, or as I said before, meeting consultant, a little less daunting and much easier to spell, I should add, term, is to serve as an advisor to the presiding officer. A parliamentarian typically is not a decision maker. A parliamentarian will offer advice to the presiding officer about how to address a situation. First, what are the standard procedures by which this particular situation is usually going to be handled? And if there are alternative approaches that might make sense in a particular situation, a well-trained parliamentarian should be able to advise the presiding officer as to what the alternatives are so that the presiding officer, who knows the group better, is able to choose the procedural alternative that most suits the nature of the group. A parliamentarian is often a trained professional like me, someone who has studied parliamentary procedure and received certification from one of the national or international organizations. But often a parliamentarian is a member of the organization who's skilled and has spent time through self-education or possibly through study with one of the national organizations of parliamentarians and learned some of the basics of how to serve as a meeting guide. Very often, there is the recommendation that a group hire a non-member parliamentarian because that person can be fully objective and impartial, whereas a member parliamentarian strives to be impartial, but is also a member and inevitably would and should have opinions about issues that come before the conference for consideration. Next slide, please. So some of the key principles that are underlie the role of a parliamentarian, that the parliamentarian should be neutral and impartial, should not vote or join in debate, and should offer opinions but not make rulings. Only the chair should make rulings because the chair or presiding officer, which is another term for the chair of the meeting, is someone who knows the group, and only someone who knows the group well should be a person who makes procedurally binding decisions for the meeting. Next slide. More on the role of a parliamentarian. Why does it matter? Because having someone who knows the procedures well and can serve as a resource for that purpose helps to keep the meetings legal, fair, and efficient, and perhaps even more important, perceived to be legal, fair, and efficient, because that person comes from outside, has no horse in any race, and is there simply to make sure that everyone's rights are respected and the standard procedures are followed, so that the decision ultimately resulting is the substantive decision that is the group conscience in this case of the fellowship. You all play an important role in striving to get to that group conscience through the process that you have at the ABC. And the parliamentarian in ACA has a specific role under the OPPM in that the parliamentarian is going to be the one who helps determine whether a proposed alternative motion maintains the integrity of an original of the original proposal. And the way we say that same concept, that's the concept the way it's phrased in the OPPM. But in standard parliamentary terminology, if you've been to meetings of other groups, you may have heard the term, it's within the scope of the notice. The different ways of saying the same thing. Next slide, please. Based on these ideals found in both common parliamentary guides, and I talked to you a little bit before about Robert's Rules and some of the alternatives to Robert's Rules, they are also found in the service spirit of ACA, and in particular in the ACA 12 concepts. Impartiality and neutrality. The parliamentarian must remain nonpartisan and may not influence outcomes based on his or her personal views or affiliations. In this case, being an outside person, I have no interest or personal interest in any kind of a determination coming out one way or the other. The issue is to make sure that the actual decision makers, who are the delegates in the conference, have their will determined as the group conscience of the fellowship through this process. In that, my role is as a servant leader, providing advice, never ruling or making decisions on my own. Next slide, please. Additional guiding principles, confidentiality and discretion. There are sensitive discussions with the conference chairs before and during the conference, which require discretion. I need to be trusted with that discretion and not to be talking outside of that context of my advice to the chairs and what the chairs tell me about the group, because only if they trust me can I give them the best advice. They'll know when they can ask me questions, and they should feel comfortable to ask me any questions about the procedure. And if questions are asked of them, to confer with me if they're not sure of what the answers are. And I need to respect and expect the group conscience to be the guiding force. That's the whole purpose of what we are striving for at the ABC, which is collective decision making through the deliberative process. And the parliamentarian helps ensure that the group consciousness is achieved through a fair process known to all and well and commonly used in the 12 steps world of recovery organizations and fellowships. Next slide, service, not control. Again, parliamentarian is a servant leader role. That's a role that's well described and understood through the AA literature. And AA historically has a number of people who work for the fellowship that are not members of the fellowship, who are servants and are doing their best to ensure that the fellowship is able to perform the important work that it does for all the members of the fellowship without hindering in any way, and by serving and supporting in what ways that the servant can to make sure that the group's will is properly, fairly, and openly expressed. And clarity and education, especially given ACA's peer-led structure, the parliamentarian has a role in educating the members and delegates about the procedures that will be used at the upcoming conference meeting and increasing the empowerment and participation of the delegates at that meeting. Next slide, please. We'll talk a little bit about what we call the governing documents for the ACA, the procedural documents that determine what we're going to use and apply in the meeting when there are procedural questions. And are there, at this point, before we move on to that slide, just wanted to ask if there are any questions. I don't see any hands up at this time. I don't see any questions. Okay. So, we'll talk about the governing documents. And these are listed in a form of a hierarchy. The higher document, the more it will bind the lower documents underneath it. For the fellowship, in this case, the highest documents are those of legal authority, which are the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws for the board of the fellowship. But those two documents govern primarily the board as a service organization. There is a feedback loop by which the conference will and can instruct the board about certain things, and that's covered to a certain extent in the bylaws. And to the extent that the conference is trying to influence the decisions of the board, it is ultimately the bylaws as a legal document. They're going to be able to control the actions and conduct of the board, just so you understand that. The highest document governing the conference are the 12 concepts, and there are 12 principles, as you might think, in the 12 concepts. Two of them, and we'll discuss in a little greater detail in a later slide, have specific application to the meetings of the conference, the ABC and the quarterly meetings. And the other concepts, the other 10 concepts, deal more with the relationship between the conference and the fellowship and between the conference and the board. And those are what we call governance oriented concepts, and they deal with what the powers of the conference are substantively over the fellowship as a whole. The next document authority is what we call the OPPM, the policy manual for the fellowship. And that, in particular, chapter 14, which covers the ABC and the conference, the annual world conference, the annual world convention, the business conference, and Appendix 10, which is the ABC voting rules. Those two provisions of the OPPM are going to be the provisions that are going to apply to these meetings primarily. And they're in writing, so written concepts or written documents, everybody knows in advance, and they create an understanding and an expectation, which is why people rely on them and why they are then going to be a higher governing document. The next highest governing document are the customary practices of the ABC over the years. If a particular procedure is repeated a number of times, it creates an expectation because the same procedure is done in the same way over time. And that is develops what's called a customary practice. The problem is that those things are not written. They're based in people's memory. Not everybody has gone to every meeting. And there's always a replacement of delegates and from time, at each meeting. So when there is some sort of a conflict as to what the customary practice is, there's a procedure that we follow that's a standard procedure, and which I'll explain to you a little later. So that's that. And this is just a preview of customary practices. And then there are situations where these above statements are what they are, but they don't cover everything. What happens when a situation comes up that's not covered by the 12 concepts, the OPPM, or customary practices within ACA? And that's when we use Robert's Rules of Order or the Principles of Common Parliamentary Law. Those are what they are, because they're well developed by outside literature, and they're commonly used as gap-filling mechanisms in the other 12-step fellowships because they're well-honed over time to address the many different situations that can come up. And it's an issue that it's much better, and we'll get to this over time. It's much better to know that there are going to be principles and procedures that can be used to address situations as they come up than to try and create new ways of dealing with things on the fly. So this is why the expertise and background in Robert's rules and the primary alternatives to Robert's are going to be helpful. Are there any, I don't see any hands raised, but I'll ask again at this point. If there might be any questions. Okay, if not, the next slide, please.
Michael, Gabriel is raising his hand.
Okay, Gabriel.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I just had a question as far as like how you were hired to represent this particular procedure. Were you hired by the non-for-profit part of ACA, or were you contacted through the service aspect of the ABC committee?
I was contacted by the board of the organization, which is the nonprofit that organization that runs the business end of the fellowship, and they contacted me well before the last quarterly meeting because I worked with ACA at the last quarterly meeting as well, and I guess it was decided that they'd like to continue to work with me. And that was in part the decision of the chairs. The chairs are the spokespeople, the two presiding officers who are your long-term presiding officers for your conferences and quarterly meetings. And I worked with them at the last quarterly meeting, and they're part of the decision-making, as I understand it, to continue. But I get paid by the board because the board has money, because they are the official body that is entrusted with that fiduciary responsibility, because only a legal body could have that power. So it was ultimately a decision of both of those.
Yeah, it wasn't a decision that was made by the delegation. You know, it was a unilateral decision by a couple of committee members. You know, this isn't
Well, it
something.
wasn't unilateral, if you excuse me, because it was a decision, formal decision of the board, as I understand it, and the board has certain powers. It's true. The chairs are the ones who are going to be the primary decision makers, and the ones for whom I will be providing the primary support, and that's so that I can help them to facilitate the meeting as well as possible. Thank you.
If I may make a little comment on that, just from inside the ABC committee,
Okay.
that it's really been difficult to operate with. I mean, it calls for a parliamentarian in the OPPM. So we need a parliamentarian. And what we've been going on is just searching around inside ACA, who has some idea of this? And so it's difficult to get people who are truly experienced in it. So we've kind of gone with, well, whoever kind of thing. And we're really glad to be able to actually have a neutral professional who really has actual knowledge about it, because it's just been kind of like, it's been difficult to actually come up with parliamentarians. It really has. And it's kind of been a different one each ABC. And so, yeah, we're glad, and I feel fortunate that we can actually have somebody who's an actual neutral professional in the situation.
Thank you very much, Marcus. There's another hand raised. ACA focus meetings.
Hi, my name is Rachel, adult child of an alcoholic. I was wondering if the trustees, I just have my question on the screen here. If the salary, if his salary is public in the ACA website, if the trustees provide that.
I wouldn't know that.
You want me to answer that, Michael?
Yes, please.
It's in the Book of Motions. We have a book, we do a motion, and it's public in the Book of Motions.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Gabriel has his hand up again, and I just want to make sure that no one else has questions before we go back to Gabriel, and then we'll take his question and then we'll move on with the next set of slides. Any other questions? Okay, Gabriel.
Yeah, the question is in regard to what you'd said is about the guiding documents and the practices being customary and that setting precedent. Like here, like as a conference of delegates, that utilizing your services is setting a precedent. And now is the time for us to be able to voice our concerns about setting that before it becomes a customary practice. That's the reasoning that we're bringing this into question. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I understand where you're coming from. Thank you. And Carmen has a hand
Yeah.
raised.
And we have used professional parliamentarians twice in the past. So there's already precedent for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So let's move on to the next slide. So there we go. I wanted to focus on, in particular, procedural considerations that go above and beyond the standard Robert's Rules style procedures that I use because of my background and familiarity with the 12 traditions and the recovery work area. The 12 concepts, as I said, deal with governance in general, but two of the concepts in particular affect meetings and the way meetings are run. The concept of substantial unanimity in concept 12, whereby the conference is going to reach all important decisions by discussion, vote, and wherever possible by substantial unanimity. And substantial unanimity is not specifically defined because the group can define it under the standard way that 12-step organizations work. But it is usually going to be two-thirds, and it's assumed to be two-thirds unless the group sets it at a different level. And for some types of situations, some types of decisions, the group can decide that it wants a higher or a lower threshold, depending on the circumstances. And the concept of the right of petition or the minority opinion, which is included in concept five, And you use and you talk about the right of petition, and that the traditional right should prevail so that the minority opinion can be heard. And you have a procedure to raise the minority opinion after a preliminary decision is made, and the way that that's done is set out in the procedures of the OPPM. Next slide. Establishing custom. So we talked about how this group is in part governed by its own customs, and that's because custom, if regularly followed, creates an expectation. And when people have expectations, that's what they're ready for. And it's much easier to concentrate on the substance when they don't have to worry about what the procedure is going to be, because they can anticipate what it's going to be based on the custom. But occasionally, because custom is not written, there may be some sort of a discussion about what the custom actually is, or whether a particular practice has been carried out often enough to have become a custom. And there's a procedure in order to establish what the custom is. And in this case, it would be the obligation of the chair of the meeting, the presiding officer, to use customs in conducting the meeting, unless the chair is aware of a written rule that overrides the custom, because written rules will always override custom when they come into conflict. That's because people can all read the written rule, and that's certain, whereas the custom is practice, and it's more likely that there are going to be different memories of what the practice may be among a widespread group. If the chair is doing something that a member, or one of the, meaning one of the delegates, believes is contrary to a long-standing established custom, the member would raise a point of order, which there's a procedure for, and the presiding officer will address that point of order, and will say what his or her opinion is. Yes, thanks for reminding me. Or, I'm sorry, I, with all due respect, I disagree. My memory is we've only done that a couple of times. It's not enough to establish custom. And in these circumstances, it's better to do things this other way. Whatever. It's the chair's right to make an initial determination and call on that issue. But if the member is not satisfied with the chair's response, the member can appeal the chair's decision, and ultimately the conference will debate and determine the custom. Once the conference has done that, that now becomes a written rule. It's a decision of the conference. So it's a conference vote, and then it will formally govern, and people will not be able, will not need to have disputes about what the custom is because it's written down formally. Next slide. What are the purposes of having procedural rules? The main thing is group dynamics. The larger the group, the more opinions there are, the more variety of people are involved, the more there is a need to have some sort of standardization of the procedure so that people can concentrate as much as possible on the substance. When people can't agree on the procedure, inevitably what happens is people start fighting about the procedure, and then there's no time to handle the substance. So the way that these standardized procedures are developed is that there's just certain general concerns in group decision making that are inevitable in any type of a group, and they need to be known well in advance, and these are what the standard types of considerations are, and they list them here. It's not saying that one is more important than the other. Both are important, but you can't have both. So you have to make a compromise. And there are so many different compromises, so many different important principles that you can't just have a one size fits all rule. So efficiency versus education. Efficiency is getting things done in a quick, reasonably quick manner. Education is making sure there's enough time for all opinions to be thoroughly expressed and everyone who's part of the decision-making body is thoroughly familiar and understands all the background. Majority rule versus minority rights. You've got to make a decision somehow. Usually that's going to be majority. In the 12-step world, it's going to be substantial unanimity, which is not 100% unanimity. As I said, it's usually about two-thirds, versus minority rights. There are certain rights that the minority has to be guaranteed and given for people to feel that the decision making is fair. The chair versus the assembly. The chair, somebody has to be in charge and basically running things and making sure that the time clock runs, the person who's doing the timing is doing that. And the different aspects of making the meeting run fairly, talk, calling on the next person to talk, etc., is done. And the rights of the assembly, which is the body as a whole, there's a tension, inherent tension there. Flexibility versus finality. How frequently we're going to be able to take new situations, new ideas into account versus finality. Okay, we've made a decision. We've gone through all this process. We don't want to overturn it just because during the next break, somebody came up with another idea that they hadn't thought about during the earlier debate and wants to bring it to everybody's attention. There's a tension there. Where do we draw the line? Sometimes you're going to want to change things, even if they've been well decided and fully debated. How do we go about doing that? And when should we go about that? Intensity versus immediacy. Intensity is we're discussing something. It inevitably is going to be less thoroughly and consistently reviewed and debated if it's constantly interrupted by other things coming up. On the other hand, inevitably, there are certain things that are so important that they need to be addressed right away. So these tensions are the inevitable tensions and principles that underlie all the rules about motions, and go into determining motions, which are basically repeated situations that come up over and over again, and the requirements for recognition and debate and decorum in debate, which are again the principles that underlie parliamentary procedure or meeting procedure, which is the more simple way of saying it. Purposes of the procedure, second slide. So these are some older quotes, and I use them because I want to show how long the same ideas have been in effect. We can say it with more modern wording now, but the same underlying principles have been part of meeting procedures and group dynamics for centuries. And the best has been honed over time and come down to the current principles that we use primarily in meetings today. One is this quote from Thomas Jefferson, and in essence, what it says is it's important just to have a rule. The rule doesn't have to be perfect. Don't make the perfect the enemy of the good by having some rule that people know in advance is much better than making up the rules or the procedures as you go along. Because if you do it that way, people don't know how to prepare. And inevitably, some people are going to think that the procedural rule was created in some way to influence the substantive decision. Even if it wasn't, people can't help but thinking that way. And so if you have procedures that are established in advance to handle situations that come up and aren't expected, that will lend itself well to the idea among the members that the procedures are fair and result in a fair decision in the long run. And next, and this is from Robert, and it's very important that people understand what Robert and meeting rules are really about. The purpose of all rules and forms is to serve the will of the assembly and not to restrain it, to facilitate, not to obstruct, the expression of the meeting's deliberative sense. What that means is the procedures are not for show-offs to say, oh, I know all this procedure, and you should listen to me, and you should listen to me tell you what the rules should be. And they're not to be used for someone to get his or her substantive way because that person is more knowledgeable than somebody else. That's why you hire somebody like me to work with you to make sure the rules are neutral and not used by somebody who claims to be more knowledgeable than somebody else to advance a substantive position. The purpose of the procedures is to make sure that things get done. And what that means in part is at certain times, you don't follow the rules strictly. Certain times you can use shortcuts, and there are well-known and established shortcuts that make sense because the purpose of the rules is not to just entertain ourselves by having lots of fancy procedures, but rather to make sure that the business is done efficiently and fairly. Next slide, please. What's the parliamentarian do before the conference? Discusses the conference with the presiding officers and the board leadership and the conference leadership to see what issues are likely to come up at the meeting. Advises on different alternative means of handling likely scenarios fairly and respectfully to all the participants, and supports the presiding officers in meeting planning and at the meeting to ensure efficiency in the meetings and allow the maximum freedom to explore alternative approaches to procedures that are to handle issues that are likely to come up. Next slide. Before the during the conference, the presiding officer is either virtual or in person. And so virtually, the parliamentarian sits beside the chair in a virtual meeting like this, meaning that I would be in conference with, indirectly in a side chat if necessary, with the chairs of the meeting to make sure that I give them the best advice. And I help to prevent any procedural errors or correct errors that might have taken place. Thank you. After the conference, the parliamentarian reviews the procedures that were used at the conference and can offer feedback for improvements at the next meeting. Not everything that happens is something that the parliamentarian is going to say something about during the meeting. If the chair is comfortable handling a situation and the members don't object to the situation, the parliamentarian's not going to step in and say, oh, you should do it this way. Because you know what? That's not what our role is. Our role is, if the meeting's running fairly and efficiently, to let it go and do what it should be done. But maybe after the meeting, I would say, you know, next time this comes up, you might want to think about handling it this other way that could be a little bit more efficient. And the parliamentarian can be available throughout the year as needed to help address procedural situations that are anticipated to come up the next quarterly meeting or the next ABC. Next slide. Any questions? Okay, I
Gabriel has his hand up.
Okay. Oh, Gabriel, sorry, you didn't raise the formal hand. Yes, Gabriel.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to do that.
You did it.
I was trying to understand one thing too, is like this PowerPoint presentation that you put together here, is that in and of itself actually even setting precedent for procedure? I mean, because everything that you've laid out there is going to be incredibly difficult to sift through and unwind if at some time what you have just laid out and all of that ever needs to be challenged for some reason.
Well, no, because it's not at a meeting. So only things that happen at a meeting are custom. This is just trying to provide you an approach to understanding the underlying principles that are going to be used when different procedures come up at the meeting. The procedures are going to be largely what's in the OPPM, which is the Operating Policy and Procedures Manual, well laid out in a lot of written detail there. So I'm just trying to give you an overview of the general principles, because if I wanted to teach parliamentary procedure, I could teach it as a full semester long course, which I'm sure you don't want to take, right? So you want to get a good understanding of what the principles are, because if you understand the principles, then the details aren't so important. The details will flow from the principles. And part of my role is when a procedure comes up and it's not obvious what you're supposed to do, is to explain it to the chairs and to explain it to you. And hopefully, if you understand the guiding principles, the procedure itself will make more sense when we explain what the procedure should be in that particular circumstance. I hope that addresses what you were looking for. So if there are no further questions at this time, we'll move on to the role of the delegate. So the body of the ABC consists of delegates. The delegates come from the local groups, the intergroups, and regions, and they serve as the voice and representative of their local of the sending group, whether it's a group, intergroup, or region. And their role is to participate in the World Service Conference, the annual business conference, and that is a very important role. But when you say a representative of, you have to understand what that means. You are bringing the ideas of different perspectives from the many, many different meetings around the world. It does not mean that you are going to do what they tell you to do. You, as a delegate, have a role in listening to all the other delegates and to the debate in the context of the meeting and then making a decision. So, although you represent a group in the sense that you're coming from the group, once you're in the conference, your goal is to create a group conscience. And so, the primary voice that you serve is the voice of the fellowship as a whole. You bring the ideas from your group, and that's what it is. What it means you represent your group. But your own individual conscience as to what the best decision is for the fellowship is what guides you in how you vote, not what you think is best for your group. You're supposed to be guided in your concern for the fellowship as a whole. So the delegates then, after the meeting, have another role, which is they bring back to their groups the results of the ABC and of the QDMs, the quarterly delegate meetings that you also have, and you bring those decisions back and you tell your group, this is what's going on, this is what the decisions that were taken by the fellowship as a whole. So it's a two-way stream, but it's the conference that is a body as a whole that represents the fellowship, and the delegate's primary role while at the conference is to be concerned about the fellowship and creating a group conscience at the meeting. Next slide. The role of the conference chair and the parliamentarian, we discussed a little bit earlier. The parliamentarian advises the chair. The chair runs the meeting. There you have two presiding officers who will be running different parts of the meeting and spelling each other to give, because it's a long meeting. And what we'll be doing is making sure that they run the procedural ends of the meeting, and they're not going to be involved in the substance. The substance is for delegates. And the reason for that is running a meeting and expressing substantive opinions are contradictory. The chair, while presiding, has to be in a neutral role as well, and just making sure that the procedures are followed so that people are called on fairly for and against, even alternation if at all possible, and that the same timing is applied to everyone, and general fairness is the rule that everyone follows. Next slide, please. Point of order. There is a point of order coordinator that's going to be assigned when a delegate is concerned about a possible violation of an established procedure. The delegate raises that issue with the point of order coordinator. That person then will advise the parliamentarian and the presiding officers, who will confer and provide a response. Next slide. Point of safety. I call that question of privilege. That's the standard parliamentary term. If you're familiar with parliamentary procedure from other 12-step organizations or from other organizations that are deliberative in nature that you belong to, you've heard this term, question of privilege. In the context of the ACA and its long-term meetings, this has been called the point of safety. A delegate will raise possible concerns about safety, health, integrity, or protection of a person or property through the point of safety coordinator, who advises the parliamentarian and the presiding officers that this point has been raised, and they will confer and determine whether it can be resolved readily or whether it needs to be brought directly to the body as a whole for a group decision, which is sometimes going to be necessary. This is raised in the context of the concepts is it's in concept 5, the right of petition. And you can petition for redress of a concern involving conduct at a meeting. That's how this idea filters in through the concepts. And again, I said standard parliamentary terminology for the procedure is to raise a question of privilege. And although there's not a point of safety coordinator in standard parliamentary meetings, this is a procedure that's been found to work well with ACA for addressing this same concern. Next slide. Point of information or request for information. So at the ACA, ABC, and the QDM, there is a coordinator for points of information. The standard parliamentary terminology for this is not point of information, it's request for information. And the reason for that is Because point of information makes it sound like somebody wants to raise information him or herself and bring information to the group as a whole. That's not what this is about. If that's what you want to do, you want to raise your hand and be recognized in debate, and you want to say what the information is that you want to share with the body as a whole. That's part of debate or discussion. But if you want to ask for information, that's why it's called in parliamentary standard terminology, a request for information, then you would go to the point of information coordinator and say, I would really like an answer to this question I have about how this affects our finances, about who is going to be responsible for taking care of this, about what has been done in the past to address this similar situation. Whatever factual situation it is, if it's a factual question or a question about what procedure we're going to follow, those types of information will be sent to the people who know that information, who are best qualified to answer that question. And so it's a way to ask a question to someone who has the information that's needed for debate. It's not a way to add the information itself. So that is what this position is for. The coordinator will raise the question in the most appropriate way to make sure that the person asking the question gets the answer that they need. Next slide. And then there's another specialized point of information involving the World Service Office. These are questions that are going to be essentially for the board, as I understand it. And there's a coordinator who will handle those types of questions. Next slide. Put together a series of resources for the body, for the members. But before I talk about the resources, I just want to see if, again, if there are any questions at this point. Okay. ACA focus meetings.
I thank you so much for the education. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for your question, and thank you for your support. I appreciate that. So if there are no other questions right now, there'll be a final opportunity for questions after the resources. And the resources, there are three slides coming up on resources I'll talk about briefly with you. This is the first one, which is parliamentary guides. And it looks like the bottom one is a little bit cut off here. But these are the citations for the most commonly used parliamentary guides. You're familiar with Robert's Rules of Order. I have cited you here the most recent edition. The original edition came out in 1876 and was 176 pages long. And that's a good part of the reason that it became so widely used throughout the United States, Canada, and even the rest of the world. And over time, more and more questions were asked, originally of Mr. Robert himself. He was an engineer, and he had a very organized way of thinking about things. But as I said, originally, is the basic ideas come from the prestige of the procedures in the British Parliament. And so over time, he answered questions, and then his heirs answered questions. And every time that happened, every 10 years or so, a new edition of the book would come out. Technology changed. When in 1876, they didn't even have working typewriters. Pretty much everything had to be copied by hand. Now we have, the internet, and everybody has a computer and an iPhone or a smartphone of some sort. And so, the most recent edition in 2020, it's a continuation of the original version, but it takes the changes in technology into account and talks about how to deal with virtual meetings and hybrid meetings and things of that nature. The other alternatives, as I said, I believe before, through the American Institute of Parliamentarians, I've been on the editorial and updating committee for two of these different alternatives. The American Institute Standard Code of Parliamentary Procedure, which is the most widely used alternative to Roberts, and the Ray Kesey's Modern Parliamentary Procedure Guide, both of which are plain English oriented. There's some other books there. The one main other one I want to draw attention to is Robbie Sabel's book on procedures at the UN. That is the most well thought out book on parliamentary procedure as used in international bodies and in the international sense. There are some underlying principles there that have some role in international governance. I'm familiar with that particular guide. Many of the rules there are really inappropriate for a fellowship like yours. It's for intended for government delegates at a large international conference, but it's useful to know the background and to know that what the international principles are. Surprisingly, the principles and procedures are not all that different between all these different books. And when there's a consensus between all the different books, we call that the common parliamentary law. It's the common way of addressing procedures because they've been honed over many, many years of usage to address standard issues and group dynamics. Next slide, please. On this slide, I suggest two summaries of parliamentary or procedure or rules meeting guides that are summaries that are much more approachable because they're a lot shorter and less filled with exceptions to the exceptions and layers of detail than the larger books. One is written by the authors of Robert's Rules itself and just hones it back down to, surprise, surprise, 176 pages, like the original edition. It's based entirely on the big book, that their big book is now 675 pages. So the terminology is pretty much the same if they don't use plain English, but it is much more concise and highlights the key points. And Jim Slaughter wrote a book called Robert's Rules Fast Track, which is much more plain English and easier to read than and much more approachable to a person who doesn't want to spend hours and hours and hours learning the rules in great detail. There are two articles here that I was involved in writing that might be useful to people who want some more background. One is about what is the meaning of common parliamentary law and how do we find it? And as I said, in summary, it's if there's a consensus between a number of the different guides that are out there. And the other is an opinion or two opinions, related opinions, that I was the principal author for when I was the chair of the AIP Opinions Committee about how a customary rule is determined. Next slide. And this is the final reference slide. There, as I mentioned, there are a couple of different parliamentary organizations out there. I've provided references for how to find their web pages. The American College of Parliamentary Lawyers, I mentioned, and the two primary North American parliamentary organizations, and the Roberts Rules Association, which is the official website for the authors of Roberts Rules and its current edition. Okay, so that ends the formal slide presentation. We've got some additional time for questions and answers if there are any at this time. Linda M is, I see, waving a hand.
Yes. Linda, I'm here in New Mexico. I'm kind of new to all this. I have kind of a complex problem, and I'm glad to have this forum to verbalize it to before maybe actually, you know, attending the meeting when it's in progress. When or to who can the question be asked about how the regional diagrams for the intergroups were created? Can an exception be made? And who to discuss it with ahead of the meeting or during the meeting, or what part of the process of the meeting, and how can this particular issue be brought up?
Oh, I think the last question repeats the first, but I do think that there were at least three questions there.
Yes.
None of which I know anything about. So I'm going to ask somebody else who does to take a crack at responding to Linda.
William is our member services committee chair, who deals a lot with intergroups and I believe also with regions. William, do you have any thoughts for Linda?
You're on mute, William.
You can text me at, or you can email me at mscchair@acawso.org, and I could try and arrange a meeting with you.
Okay, that would be great. Do the intergroups have a delegate that attend the business meeting as well as WSO?
Yes, the intergroups are allowed one delegate as well.
As well as the other regular groups. Okay.
Right.
I've only been an observer, so I'm hoping to, you know, go to my first meeting all the way through. And then my other question is, I know they have smaller people break off into smaller groups to discuss different issues. So would that be an opportunity to bring up my group's concern?
I don't think we're going to have breakout rooms in this ABC. We've got far too much business to attend to.
Thanks for that heads up then. Okay.
And there are the QDMs for business that can't be gotten to during the annual meeting. And part of the work of the board is to, between meetings, respond to concerns of members of the fellowship. So if you can't get that, your concern question raised at the ABC because of one of the issues that's already in front of the body,
okay.
That's a way that you can try to bring these things up. That's why the quarterly delegate meetings were organized, is because the group needed more time to address all the issues that were coming up.
Okay, and that would be a place in the future that could be attended ahead of another ABC to be heard further. So,
yes. Okay, BP Bangkok has a question, as Andrew's. Mary Jo, you just raised.
Yeah, I was just going to point out that some of the things that Linda's raising are better taken up with William, because it may not be in line with some of the other things that go on. But, yeah.
Thank you. And Sue, do you want
to? Yeah, I would just add, William will talk to you, Linda, and about the committee stuff. But there's also something called the ballot proposals, and that season will start up again in September. And that's a great place to bring up what you want, your group wants to have a concern on the agenda. And that will be for the 2026 ABC. So there's a lot of different avenues available to you, and welcome. Thanks.
Thank you. And so there's BP Bangkok.
I watched this through twice. I'm sure it's on your slides. There's a lot of rules and regulations on how governments use this and processes as well, and how international organizations use this. Could you kind of maybe relate it to how it reflects on our personal recovery or on the local group recovery, everything that we learned today? Thanks.
Okay. Well, what we're talking about is principles of group dynamics that are going to be incorporated in group decision making. The different types of inputs and processes are going to need to be adjusted depending on the size. So, from the business aspect of your local meetings, where you have decision making for the group that takes place in that context, but in a very informal way. These un are same underlying principles as the ones that are going to underlie the development of a group conscience for the entire fellowship by the conferences, by the ABC and the QDM. So it's very important to understand the underlying principles. Ultimately, Robert's Rules of Order and general parliamentary law are derived from principles that were honed in the British Parliament because those people were working full time for considerable periods of time at group decision making. And so they had the opportunity to see lots of different commonly occurring situations and determine what were the best ways of resolving them fairly to everybody involved. And that's why, though, their procedures have trickled down into procedures for larger and smaller groups as modified for the needs of each particular group. So I hope that helps to address your concerns or where your question is coming from. But what is interesting is with a little overlay from the 12 concepts of AA, almost every 12-step group uses these same basic procedures that are used in other groups for their group decision making. Any other questions?
And Michael, it's Sue. I could add one of the things that we say is that our steps are for our individual recovery. Our traditions are for our group and personal recovery. And our concepts are for our personal group and WSO recovery and healing. So just a thought. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you. Okay, well, if there's nothing further from the participants at this point, I'm available for questions that can be directed to me through the presiding officers of the World Service Conference
We
and
have one more question from Aaron.
Okay, thank you, Aaron.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for the presentation. I really enjoyed it. So I have this question. We have the suggested commitment of service in ACA. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm not familiar with the way ACA does it, so
Okay.
go ahead.
Well, my question, and maybe it could be answered some other time, is the suggested commitment to service is really about how we operate out of our personal recovery in service, in a nutshell. And how would something, when you talk about, I think your term was common practices, relying on common practices when there aren't actually necessarily a rule on something. How does something like the suggested commitment to service come into play in an ABC when someone's basically acting out old behaviors?
I'm probably not the best person to answer that, but perhaps one of the meeting, the co-chairs of the meeting, or one of the trustees or one of the members of the ABC committee would be best able to address that.
Can you state the question one more time, Aaron?
Sure. So the suggested commitment to service, and when you're in a meeting and what seems to be happening is someone is not following the suggested commitment to service, how does that play into how do we handle it? Like is it relative to a business conference?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, the way I look at it as a lot of these parliamentary procedures provide structure to the meetings, and they provide a common understanding. So that can help prevent some of uncertainty and some of those behaviors. Because if we don't have some baseline understanding and rules, then you're much more likely to get people behaving out of their, the critical parent or the inner child. So I see it as supplementing the commitment to service. That's how I think of it. I don't know if that answers your question.
Good. All right. Thank you. Just a thought.
Yeah, I also kind of feel like there's an aspect of like having healthy boundaries around stuff. And then also that a lot of the I feel like a lot of the parliamentary procedures that there's so much based on group conscience that then it's like the sort of the individuals however they're acting is kind of gets sort of like dealt with by sort of the loving parent of the group conscience, that the group conscience is the thing that really, tradition to it's the thing that really this is all about. And I do think that the parliamentary procedures are really based in that the group aspect of it. That's
Thank you. And I'll just add that for me, the suggested commitment to services is the how, right? We've been talking about the what, which are the rules, the boundaries more than rules, really. So the how. And I think there's a lot of prevention that goes in there. And I remember tradition one, our common welfare comes first above all. And I think that's really important, especially in the conference. And I think of parliamentary rules. We have the point of safety if things do get out of control, and there's our members, delegates that are feeling unsafe. And there's also from a parliamentary procedure called what is it called, Michael? It's a question. What did you say?
Right, to raise a question of privilege.
Question of privilege. There it is, which is very similar to our point of safety.
Unfortunately, it's very 19th century language and doesn't sound great to the current, to the ordinary ear today. So I think point of safety is a very good way of saying it. But the acronym that's used in the business is SHIP. And so it stands for safety, health, integrity, and personal and group properties. So that's that's an acronym that comes to mind. And it was there when you thought of point of safety. It was just in the background because that's the commonness of what group decision making is about. The same ideas recur over and over again, both in the 12-step world and in general meeting procedures.
Could you repeat that SIP
Okay.
acronym?
SHIP is safety, health, integrity, and protection of person and property.
Thank you.
Okay. If someone has additional thoughts or questions, we're at the end of our time right now. Please coordinate through the either the board or the chairs of the presiding chairs for the upcoming meeting, and we'll get the questions responded to in advance. Thank you very much. It's been great working with you. I look
Thank you,
forward
Michael.
to seeing you soon. Thank you.
Thank you. And Cause has his hand up, Michael.
You're on mute, Cause.
It's not really for Michael. It's to direct attention to the Big Red Book, which speaks to disruptive members in meetings. And that, I think, would provide a good guideline for at least a consideration of how to hold conduct that you might find disruptive. It's a good starting point. If you take a look at the index, it's meetings and disruptive members, and then it gives three sections to take a look at.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Michael.
See you again soon.
Thank you, Michael.
Yes.
Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank
Yes,
you for
sir.
your service. Thank you all for your service.
Thanks. Yeah, so we'll do the formal bringing to an end. I think we have like just one thing is we're still looking for service at the ABC timers, point of information, and some other ones. I think I can put this stuff in the chat if
Point of
somebody,
safety.
yeah, point of safety. And so you can either email the ABC at w no at adultchildren.org, ABC at adultchildren.org, or if you're on Slack, direct message me, Marcus, or Carmen. Yeah, so then I guess we could, if somebody would like to take us out with the serenity prayer.